Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
If you like Joe Abercrombie's first law, I think tone is somewhat similar.
It's orcs. It's crude.
I definitely see other people really enjoying it.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Tutor Ramble episode. My name is Austin.
And I'm Richard.
Today, we are discussing The Grey Bastards, which is our final SBFBO book from the Contest of Champions. If you've been following along, we have been judging and ranking the 10 winners from the self-published fantasy blog off the SBFBO, which is hosted by Mark Lawrence. Thank you, Mark Lawrence, for having us be a part of this. And we're going to have our final tally here to see what is our final ranking by doing a spoiler-free review on The Grey Bastards, the book title you see and the book you see on the thumbnail. The Grey Bastards, written by Jonathan French. This one, the second SBFBO that was ever done in the past decade, back in 2016, and this being a self-published competition, this was one of two books that was commercially published later. It got commercially published by Crown in 2018. Very cool. So, spoiler-free, we'll give some thoughts on it, and we'll show you where we rank it with everything. But, Rich, how would you pitch this book? Well, what do you think about it? Little thoughts, little pitch. Where's it tickling you?
I mean, it is your classic fantasy adventure, but from the perspective of a half orc, where the half orc is actually a half orc, not with like a person that basically a human, but looks like a half orc. It is your fantasy adventure from a perspective you don't often see in stories. So that is the unique angle that this book does, and that is like the central reason to read it. If that interests you, go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm on base here.
Yeah, there's bastards there.
They are bastards.
And it is a group. It's a ragtag. It has more of your, I guess classic fantasy put in this different perspective. In that way, do you think Grimdark's an accurate portrayal, or is that a bit too far? How would you describe the mood and tone of the book?
The tone isn't very grimdark. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's far more of a buddy adventure. It's far more hopeful in its tone than grim. However, there are some grim stuff that happens in the books. So, and even some of the culture of the orcs is pretty grim, but it's not seen that way because they are who they are.
Maybe crude.
Crude.
Crude might be the right word there because it's orcs. It's crude. There's like some sex and dick jokes and that all that kind of stuff is going to be in this book. So whether you're privy to that or not, you like that or not, that there's a lot of that. Just in the orc culture and how they even regular dialogue with one another and their banter, their insults. Crude and orcish in that way. Yeah. This was again published by Crown in 2018. But as far as online goes with the SPFBO, this averaged an 8.65, which ties for one of the highest scores. You had someone giving it a 10 from the Illidus Book Reviews, and the lowest score was a 7. It was the second winner overall. That was after the first year, which wasn't that Thief Who Pulled in Trouble's Raids, I believe. Was the first year?
I believe you're right. Yeah.
But yes, with that being said, anything that you would say that's a similar book that people have read that's more popular that would maybe go, hey, if you like that, you might like The Grey Bastards?
If I'm to think, honestly, to some degree, if you like Joe Abercrombie's First Law, I think tone is somewhat similar. In that sense, like, it's just not the multi POV that you get with First Law. There's some, honestly, it's your classic adventure with a, it's your classic adventure story with a group of side characters that, you know, a band of brothers type of story. Right. So I'm failing to think of other books that specifically, because it is, because I'm thinking just very broad of it, I'm trying to think of a very specific example.
No, that's fair. Because I was asking you more than because I couldn't think of a great comparison myself. At least a more popular book. But yeah, that so it's a little bit unique in that way. That's what you get out of self-published books. So that is a neat perspective. But with that being said, Rich, do you want to get to what's your spoiler-free rating of the book and we can see where this lands? Like, what were your personal thoughts on it?
Yeah, so during the reading experience, I was a little bit all over the place here. But my overall score has settled right now at a 2.5.
Disappointed.
And it is for a couple key decisions in the book. I wasn't disappointed all the way through, but we'll get into the details. To me,
actually,
the ending really rubbed me the wrong way, and then specifically character issues that colored my opinion. However, I did actually enjoy most of my time reading it. So that's my thought.
That's maybe yesterday when you were still reading the book, you had a couple hours left. We were talking about a point in the book that you enjoyed.
Yeah.
That personally, like the ending, I had a little issue with. But with that being said, I gave it a 3.25, somewhat good. And I overall, like you, I think there's the, especially the midpoint of this book, I was very invested in and I had a good time reading it. But grand scheme of things, it did some things that I thought were interesting, but then the ending I thought could have leaned into more of that uniqueness. But it's well written, and you'll get for the target audience for this, I think definitely does its job.
But this I am personally disappointed rather than
sure.
Like I definitely see other people really enjoying it and fully support. So we'll talk some details of like what people should read this, and I would recommend this to a lot of people.
Yes, and but I am with. There's some points in this that I was like, oh, didn't like as much, and there's points that I did really like. So it's a mixed bag for me, but leans on the somewhat good overall. So Four Great Bastards, with me giving it a 3.25 and you giving it a 2.5, that makes it a 5.75, right? Average there, and that puts us tied with Small Miracles.
Interesting.
Now, with this being our first tie, so with Small Miracles, here's how we can compare it. Okay, we'll have to figure out what our... math.
Well, my score may change by the end.
I guess that'll decide it. We'll see by the end.
Let's see. Do you go down? Do I go up? What happens?
So let's see. By the end of this video, we will finalize our 10 SPFBOs. Now, if you don't want to get spoiled for the Grey Bastards, you can skip to the timestamp down below. We'll put a timestamp where we rank the 10 at the end of this video. You'll see it'll probably be at like the 50-minute hour mark, wherever. But at the end, we will make sure our order is clear.
Yeah.
So, but I will say that we'll go through our whole entire order, but Sword of Kaigan will be first, I'm guessing. So, all right.
I don't think there's much of a chance of Grey Bastards overtaking it.
Yeah,
but
I think that one's staying number one. But okay, we'll have our whole 10 total list at the end of this video. But with that being said, do you want to get into spoiler territory?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Spoiler warning, click off if you don't want to be spoiled for the Grey Bastards, or skip ahead to that timestamp, wherever it is down below. All right.
Plot snapshot?
Yes. So,
all right.
Quick overview. Go ahead.
I'll do a quick overview. Our main character is a half-orc named Jackal. And for the sake of it, his two best friends are Oats and Fetching, other half-orcs. Jackal is vying for the chief seat of his clan, his half-orc clan of the Grey Bastards. And he's going on a venture, a mystery. He kills a human, or Fetching kills a human for him, and that is a chain of events that gets the Grey Bastards stuck between different factions in this world. Ultimately, at roughly the midpoint, Jackal makes a bid for taking the clan leader's space, or clan leader's chair, and at the crucial moment, Fetching actually betrays him and actually votes against him for chief. And this causes him ultimately to be exiled into being a nomad, of which he explores the wider world. He learns more about the world and the nature of why the Half-Orcs are there in the first place. He comes back to actually save his home, the Badlands, from his chief, the magical wizard that's manipulating him, and all the different factions that want to basically crush the Half-Orcs.
Because he finds out more about the Claymaster,
yeah,
who ends up, he was part of this plague in this past where there's these nine plague victims who then spread out, and one of them was the Claymaster. He finds out why the Claymaster is working with Crafty, the wizard. He was like, ah, there's more to this, that they're trying to take control of this other, I forget the town's name, but had the one that starts with an H. Apologies. But that is, finds out, our protagonist finds out over time why, and then ends with a big kind of, not a Last Stand-esque
kind of scene. Yeah. It ends with their keep actually being destroyed. The kiln is basically destroyed. The Grey Bastards are now led by Fetching. So she is now the clan leader of the new name being the True Bastards.
Who's a half-elf.
Who's a half-elf, half-orc. Mm. Jackal is now going off on his own saying, like, hey, I am hunted by all these different factions. I also have ties to the halflings. Like, I am magically compelled to help them. Like, I can't be the leader for the True Bastards because of all these different reasons. Very logical. It's like, I'm going to go off on it. But I'm going to go off, find Crafty the Wizard, and I'm going to take him down.
He's off to see the wizard. The wonderful wizard of Oz. A wonderful wizard of Ork.
Quick pause from video to talk about our sponsor, Into the AM. Into the AM is sponsoring us. They have some great apparel. We really like their t-shirts. They have cool designs, actual quality material, not your crappy dollar store t-shirt material here. Go check them out. You can use the code RAMBLE for 10% off. They get a sale. You get a shirt. We get money. It's all good. But check out some of their great designs. I really like it personally. I like their all beach shirt. I got my, it is winter, but I got my beach attire ready. All right, go check them out down below. And now back to the video.
Okay, great. So you want to go emotional impact?
Yeah.
Okay, here's our review. So emotional impact, what'd you give it out of 5 stars?
This is my highest of 3.5. I thought it was good.
Neat. Oh, interesting. So very different score. Mine is 3.25, somewhat good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For most of this book, I was actually having a pretty good time moment to moment.
Yeah.
Even if I was not, even if the plot or mainly the character connection, this is the more bizarre thing. Despite my lack of a connection to the main character and lack of interest in them, I still was enjoying the banter. I was enjoying the mystery and what was going on of the plot. So I had a good time reading this.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I had two things I liked that elevated it emotionally, then two things I didn't as much. But I will say that the thing that's going for overall, what would you say the emotional pull? Is it some actions in here, but also what else do you think the book's going for?
It's a lot of it is about loyalty. Loyalty to an individual, loyalty to a group, an ideal of what are your, like,
theme-wise, but what emotionally, yeah. Like, what do you think it's more action-heavy, emotional? Like, what do you think on that side of things?
I think it is trying to go for a bit more of the thriller and mystery type
mystery,
deal.
Mystery, yeah.
Along with that adventure.
Little mystery. Yeah, I see that too. Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, for me, the things I did like, one was a little bit of the orc politics and just how vying for Claymaster and finding out just how orcs this culture kind of live goes more in world building stuff, but I was interested in it. But as far as moments that I was invested and emotionally pulled, that midpoint where Fletch betrays Jackal, which Jackal didn't see coming, the Claymaster didn't see coming, and I as the reader didn't see coming, I thought that was a really good twist because I was so curious about her motivations, and that moment made the book feel very different than the way I thought it was going.
Yeah,
I thought I had the book figured out and that we were going to have this kind of plot with Fetching, getting control of the kiln, of the Grey Bastards, having control there, and then this being more of a the crafty having his plans with Jackal of crafty having more to be said, like after Jackal takes control, it's actually not what he expected, and he finds out more about why the Clay Master, like what he's protecting. I thought it was going that direction, but then when Fletch betrayed him and her reasonings for it, I was really curious and interested in that. Going, okay, she did this specifically for the greater good of the Grey Bastards. Jackal wasn't the right person, and we saw her personality is a little standoffish, and she was hiding more than we thought. And Jackal's the one who got her into the Grey Bastards in the first place. With Oates, how could you do this? So you feel the betrayal that Jackal feels, but when she gives her reasonings, you're going, well, it makes sense from her point of view. Like she
had a decision between her personal loyalty to an individual and her loyalty to her group, mm-hmm. and she made the choice of her group. At that point, I was like, oh, this is interesting. She's a very interesting character. And yeah, that was a highlight. That was a highlight of the book for me.
I would say why that dampened a little bit in the ending, because we find out that she was forced to lie because of the crafty and because she was being forced to say that, which that also makes sense. That doesn't break anything. It's just,
less interesting.
It was less interesting than her actually believing that and having that conflict.
Oh,
between
yeah.
Fletch and Jackal. And, you know, that's a fine way to go. Just I was like, I like the direction it was going with her betraying Jackal and justifying that and potentially being more of a source of conflict.
Oh, and I could definitely see, like, if that kept the direction and, you know, Jackal ultimately going the direction of, hey, look, you betrayed me personally, but I can't fault you. Like you had the right to stand up. Like we are equals, and you chose the group over me. I get it. And we can like bury the hatchet, but also I'll never be like, we can't be friends again. I can't trust you in that same way before, but I can respect it. Like I thought we were going to have that kind of like tenuous relationship between them going forward. And now it's just, they're okay. They've always been friends. Like, she didn't betray them, so yeah, it's way less interesting.
And I wasn't exactly rooting for Jackal, which we can get into in characters, but it's important to say for this part at least, the thing that made that midpoint interesting as well with Fletch and how she responds to Jackal, and then Jackal goes to her room afterwards. And there's the sex scene between the two of them, and she just makes him like has sex and makes him ejaculate on himself and humiliates him. It says, "Hey, that's what. Now you know how all the whores or what does she say?
Yeah.
You know, that all the prostitutes that you sleep with feel. Mm-hmm. Now you know how they." And when she did that, and that little humiliation from Jackal, I wasn't sure, because Jackal is a character, I wasn't sure how much I was rooting for him, how much I was supposed to root for him. And when that happened, I was going, oh, it built to that resentment that, like, did Fletch have resentment for Jackal as a person?
Oh, it came across
as a layer there.
It came across, and I do think it's still true that, yeah, because Fetchlin had this, you know, did actually love Jackal, especially at one point, more so than another, at that scene, that she resented how much she, you know, sleeping with all these different whores despite their feelings for each other, and so she's, you know, feeling resentful, jealous, whatever have you. And so it added some emotional tension to that scene.
Other thing, anything that stuck out to you, another scene emotionally at all? The sludge, we got the sludge scenes, we have Crafty the Wizard, we have
the rest was, I'll get to it in plot of, I was almost always interested by the mystery and then almost always disappointed by
the answers.
Gotcha. And so that was always the emotional letdown of like, okay. That's what it is.
Interesting. Right.
So that's my bigger problem with it. However, I thought it was exciting. Cool. Yeah. I thought the action scenes were fun. There's some touching moments, especially with Oates. I think Oates was an emotional heart of it. I liked a couple key moments with how Oates treated the children of how kind he is. Like, that's, that was a touching moment. Mm-hmm. And also their friendship was, mm-hmm. you know, good to see. I felt good about it. It added enough mystery where I was intrigued. Ultimately, I was disappointed by the answers. The action was fun. But yeah.
Why don't we go into thought-provokingness then?
Yeah, let's get into it.
What'd you give it?
2.5. Disappointing.
I gave it an A.
Yeah.
Not applicable. I get it.
The main thing to me is the central theme that I think the book was setting up for in several different areas is loyalty to the individual, loyalty to the group, mm-hmm. of where's your higher loyalties lie. Yeah, other.
Where
your loyalties lie. Other book.
Yeah.
Other SBFBO book. Mm-hmm. So centrally with, we already talked about with fletching between Jackal and the Grey Bastards, setting up this fletching, mm-hmm. choosing the group over the individual.
Right.
And then we have Crafty of why is he doing what he's doing? Is he doing it for himself? Is he doing it for the other half orcs? Is he doing it for the Badlands? Especially with Claymasters for so many years has been doing what he's doing to protect the half orcs, protect his group. And at the very end, he's now going like, again, I thought it was going in more direction of Claymaster is choosing the personal vengeance over the group. And the ending really shows something else. And so I think a lot of these group versus individual loyalties fell flat because they all kind of work out to there is no actual distinction. Anytime that the character is given particularly a choice between that, it's then later revealed that actually it wasn't a choice. Actually, there wasn't a hard decision. They were just doing basically the right thing and they kind of overlapped. That was my problem. So specifically with Fetching, we find out that actually she was forced to make that decision. So it was for Jackal that she betrayed him so he wouldn't die. And then with Claymaster of thinking, hey, he's going off the edge. He's vying for personal vengeance and he doesn't care that the Grey Bastards are going to fall with him. But then we find out, like, it makes a very logical point of, like, I'm dying. Like, this, like, I am the only thing holding off the orcs from completely wiping us all out, and I'm not going to be around forever. We have to do something now. Like, this has to end. Like, we have to have a better position. We have to make a play. And so, yeah, fair. Fair enough. Like, I completely understand. Claymaster is not betraying the half-orcs. He is making a very logical, understanding play. And he is... So for him, it's not any... Like, he's not betraying the half-orcs in any way. It's just that the group and the individual overlap for him.
Yeah, he's basically saying that... Well, he does say, I can't fight forever. No one can fight forever. And then a response from Jackal is, you can fight till the end.
Yeah, you know, which...
That's the response.
That's
the little bit of the...
But that's also wrong. Mm-hmm. Claymaster is fighting till the end. Of, like, the end is coming, and it's like, okay, what do I do? Do I just let all the half-orcs die because of all the orcs swamping in? What do I do? Like, I'm a delaying tactic. I can delay the inevitable, but it's coming. Okay, while we have a chance, let's try to actually have a better foothold so all the half-orcs, like, have a position in this world, mm. and not constantly the slaves of the humans or the slaves of the orcs. This is their chance.
Mm.
That's fighting. He is fighting. He's trying to go down with one last fight for everybody.
Last hurrah, yeah.
But he is thinking of everyone. So, yeah, that's a problem with me. Then Jackal also is... You think it's more... Is he learning the lesson of his ambition? I guess that is kind of more of the lesson of... In the beginning, he's more ambitious. He wants power because just I think I'm right. And then the wisdom coming from, like, hey, I'm not always right. There's other people that, like, there's wisdom in knowing the right person for the job. So him going like, hey, look, Fetching was actually, she has a cooler head. She is better positioned to lead the Grey Bastards. And so giving up his ambition for wisdom. That's, I think, the only, like, that the only theme that really worked in here.
Yeah, there's certainly, it's not voidless, and because storytelling happens here, there's certainly themes. I just didn't think you remember when we read Where Loyalties Lie, the other SPFPO, it was in that similar fashion of like, oh, it's about loyalty and stuff. Mm-hmm. But just in this regard, wasn't stand out enough for me to have too much of a thought about it. But I get the point of there's certainly that theme of, you know, loyalty to your kin, your guild, your other half-orc brethren versus, you know, what are you willing to do and sacrifice as well. So yeah. there's certainly that stuff there. I think I don't have too much to say on the themes though. So it's just, yeah, I will.
Yeah, I just was ultimately disappointed by it because it felt like it was setting up all these ideas and then really kind of just left it on the table. It's like, actually, there's no conflict here. It didn't actually say anything of significance one way or the other. And to me, that's really disappointing.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Do you want to go on to characters?
Yeah.
What'd you give characters out of 5 stars?
A 2.0.
Flawed.
Yeah.
Okay. I gave 3.25, somewhat good.
Now, my reason for it is I liked the side characters vastly more than the main character. And not just liked. Like, you don't have to like the main character, but you should at least be intrigued and want to follow him. I didn't care about Jackal at all. Wasn't rooting for him, wasn't even particularly interested in him as a character. Really could not care less. The world, the mystery, everything else was carrying my enjoyment. Did not care.
That's interesting because I have the same thoughts on the Jackal of I didn't know if I was supposed to, obviously I guess you're supposed to root for him. It was, maybe that's not obvious because it's more of your, you know, how obvious is it that you're supposed to root for Glockta in First Law, right?
I think is more obvious than that. Like
that's what I mean, where it's the case of, obviously he has this gray morality in a way, he's an orc and you're following him, and I guess the introduction of him and his treatment of prostitutes and just how he acts, the admiral thing about him is supposed to be, look at him getting Fletchin there and look at his friends with Oates and how he's the camaraderie and him taking one for the team of saying, no, I actually killed Garcia. Or sorry, I killed, was it Garcia or, did I get that right?
But whatever.
That was me, not Fletch. That's supposed to be more the getting you to see his good side and root for him. But with that being said, there wasn't anything in particular that was, not that he had to be honorable, but there was something about Jackal's character that when Fletch betrayed him, I wasn't going, oh, I didn't have that emotional reaction of how dare you, Fletch, do this to Jackal. Because I guess some of his aims were a little, he wanted to take down the Claymaster, get into power. It just seems like he was also,
he was just so incredibly reckless the entire time. So if you're Fletch, you go like, yeah, maybe he wouldn't be a good leader. Like, fair enough. He's very impulsive and doesn't clue people into these plans. And
okay, an interesting
bumble, just runs into problems.
An interesting route with his character. This is a little bit of a different book at this point, but you would have staying in the context of the book, that midpoint happened where Fletch betrays Jackal. And the end lesson for him as the book progresses, if Fetch actually did betray Jackal, and that was the case, and Jackal has to learn something about how he was blind to it, his ambition was more blind, and the people he thought he was close to actually treated poorly, or there was something about he thought he was this leader and could have this leadership role, but truly he was less considerate of others than he thought he was. And this maybe theme of loyalty and like your friends around you and your kiln, did he care about the wrong things? It was more of an introspection of that. With Jackal would have been the more intricate character thought process, but then it went down the route of,
yeah, everyone's basically on the good side. No one betrayed anybody. Yeah.
That was a less interesting route for it for me, but I still did the camaraderie with the group, I guess, with Oates and Fletch and Crafty is a wizard too, or the clay master. All of their reasons, they all felt like very real characters in the world to me. But I will say that Jackal, I was less interested in Jackal than the side characters.
Oh yeah, sure. And I think it's to an extreme that I completely agree with you.
Yeah,
but I think that's a significant flaw of our POV main character. I am so vastly uninterested in him. That's a significant problem, especially with a bunch of mystery leading up with him, of especially him being a nomad going forward.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
In the book that he's going on this mission alone. He has all, like, he has the special magic bones and he's got this, like, all this stuff that's wrapped up with him. Like, he's literally the least interesting part for the story for me. That's a significant flaw. Like, despite my like and intrigue into Fletch, Oates, even the Clay Master and Crafty. I like Crafty's character. He's fun. And so, yeah, that's... I somewhat liked Starling when she was given something to go for. So, yeah.
I like how they treated Doria, or what's her name? Or the...
Who are you talking about?
Everybody loved her. What's her name? Let me find a character sheet.
Hold on, describe is it the female half-orc that was kind of their mother figure?
Yes.
I think that's Beryl.
Was it Beryl? Oh, mm-hmm. It sounded like a D on the audiobook. Okay. Yeah, it could have been Beryl. But I like how through her we got to see the personalities of everybody for how much they liked her. Was nice. Mm-hmm. That was that unity, and it felt like a group, as the Grey Bastards felt. I also give a little bit of credit. You know, when you think of Bridge Four, or you think of the Howlers, or you think of a group, the Grey Bastards certainly felt like a strong unit. As I saw the camaraderie, I saw why they were a unit and why they were a group. And even though it did go down that route in the end of them being, there not being a betrayal and them being close, I think of the Grey Bastards. Well, now they're the True Bastards, right? Is that the new name? The
also True makes sense because Fetching is not gray. I believe she still has green skin.
Mm.
So, at least how I remember in the introduction of the book, how she described.
And that, so the group itself came across well as well. So I didn't hate the main character as much as you did. Maybe I definitely wasn't like as interested, but it wasn't like a book too. Sorry, I'm going to anger people, but with this and Strength of the Few, you know. But he certainly was, weirdly enough, I was thinking as I was reading it, how much am I supposed to be rooting for him or not? I was asking that question of, and it became clear you're supposed to. He's our protagonist. Yeah. You're supposed to root for him. He's more that crude, muddy, gruddy, you know, it's this different world. You're also following an orc, and it's taking that classic fantasy, but following orcs. So...
Yeah, it is also strange of, I feel like he's supposed to come off as relatively intelligent and yet not. I don't know. He seems to be about as intelligent as the book demands him to be, because he makes a lot of dumb decisions and kind of barrels through. And it's like, yeah, that's the York thing. Like, I get it. But then other times he's supposed to figure out this mystery. It just doesn't. I don't know. It's very middling that I'm not exactly sure where I'm supposed to land. Is he smart for an orc? Is he just kind of dumb and full of himself? I don't know.
And then he meets his basically mentor figure where...
Warbler.
Meets Warbler. And Warbler gives him the background and backstory to what actually happened, because Warbler was the second in command to the Claymaster. Again, there was that interesting stuff of Warbler and Claymaster having this past in history, Claymaster having his motivations for, hey, he's dying, we need a last move, what can we possibly do? We're out of options, because Crafty Crafty and Claymaster, them being the antagonists, didn't mind them as much. Their logic made sense. And yeah, that's pretty much.
But it does ultimately end up with Warbler's motivation makes sense without the ending, especially of Warbler knows that, hey, Claymaster is making a lot of dumb decisions. He's losing it. He's going to run the Grey Bastards into the ground. Like, completely get it. However, him taking control, you kind of think to yourself of Warbler knows. Warbler knows that if Claymaster's gone, like, the Badlands are gone. Like, there's, he understands just as much as Claymaster does that, okay, great, let's stand up for, like, let's give the Grey Bastards a leader they deserve. Okay, great. And in 2 years, when the orcs come in, you're all dead. Warbler knows this. So what, because I know his, it was kind of set up of Claymaster's too focused on the past and he wants personal vengeance. And Warbler's like, no, hey, I've given up some vengeance for the sake of the Badlands, like for my family, for my home. Like, and that's the priority, to protect my home. That's what Claymaster's doing. He's trying to protect his people.
So, do you want to go into plot then?
Yeah.
So, what'd you give plot out of 5 stars?
2.25.
I could be convinced to lower mine here, definitely. I give it 3.25, somewhat good.
Yeah.
But the ending portion went the more traditional route, I guess.
The ending is the most disappointing of, really did not like it being revealed that Fletch she was forced to betray Jackal. Way less interesting than if she actually truly believed it. But beyond that, the everything with Claymaster and supposed to be this, like, the ending scene with Claymaster and Jackal kind of finding Jackal basically taking the stance of, like, hey, look, you need to stick up for the Badlands. Like, despite it being a wasteland, it's still our home, and you're abandoning it for revenge. And Claymaster going, no, but we don't have a choice. Like, I'm going to die, and you all are dead when I die. We have, like, we got one card to play now. We have to get ourselves a decent enough
And
footing.
First off, you guys wouldn't be here if it weren't for me.
Yeah. That too. And just everything of, like, Claymaster makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm on his side by the end of, like, the rest are wrong, ultimately. And, like, just a pure logical point of view. Like, is Claymaster wrong in the sense of willing to massacre all these different innocent humans? Sure, bad. But on a logical level, like, they're dead unless Claymaster makes this play.
Well, it's something about the plot that I, even though that I did enjoy somewhat, is that their motivations were clear, made sense, and we had, from the antagonist's point of view, why they're making their decisions.
Yeah.
So I did like that portion at the very least. I think, how would you explain the plot structure where we get introduced, that the very first scene of this is we get the confrontation between the Grey Bastards and this kill that Fetch ends up killing, killing this person. And so what did you think about that and the inciting incident, how that drew the story in and pulled it through?
It's pretty good. I like the inciting incident and just it playing into the politics and, like, okay, this was probably a mistake, and then how that compounds with different factions kind of letting things go, and ultimately the fact that, like, okay, we think we covered it up, actually wait, the horse got back to the Castilian, like, uh-oh. Some, like, how'd that go? Who betrayed us? Why was the horse let free? And just, are these the political machinations?
You also find out throughout the book how much those mysteries change of, hey, the horse, at first it was an accident, we find out. No, wait, is when an accident was actually let free by?
I think it's Delia is the prostitute.
Delia, or Belia, like you said.
Right? No, Beryl is the...
Oh, yes.
Is the mother figure.
Delia is the prostitute, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking of Delia beforehand. That's why the names were confusing. Sorry, Delia is who I was referring to them, but Delia lets the horse free.
Yeah.
And so that we find out that about the horse. We're also discovering there was the whole side plot with the sludge.
Yep.
And the sludge having, who we haven't talked about, the elf and the pregnancy. What did you think about that subplot?
It's intriguing, but also seems to be dropped when necessary. Like, it added into Jackal's character of very much tied, like, he is led around by his loins, you know, of like, he's willing to be kind and heroic basically for any, like, woman, and treat, like, that's his moral compass, effectively. Even so,
even Oates didn't want to hit Fletch, right? But I mean, part of that's growing up with Fletch.
That's more up, like their more camaraderie.
Their kinship. Jackals is a little bit different.
No, because Jackals, like, oh yeah, I'll be a good leader. I'm going to do all these the right things. And then ultimately, like, he. Yeah. And so, and thing is, it's not a noble motivation in the sense of, like, hey, this person is in trouble and needs help. It's more, I am personally very attracted to this woman. And so I'm going to change all of my plans. I'm going to disregard everything, and I'm going to save him, and then I'm going to post hoc rationalize it.
Mm.
And it seems like a flaw generally to me, just because of how he rationalizes it in the end. But yeah, with the elf girl, like, it was fine, but it seemed like it was dropped when it needed to be and then picked back up when the plot demanded it. Didn't seem as coherent and, you know, weave together as well as maybe I would have wanted.
And then we find out through the, I would say it's especially the first half of the book where the plot was really interesting and well done, was more so the Crafty and Jackal going on their little mini adventure, and Jackal leaving the Grey Bastards in the beginning too. He goes off on his own. He knows he's not going to be able to come back, welcome them open arms. He's doing something wrong. And so he leaves, and he's there with Crafty, and Crafty is talking him up and seems to be on Jackal's side. And then we get back with the kill. We get back there with the Grey Bastards, and as he's Crafty is already talking to Claymaster when he gets back and returns and reveals to the Claymaster about the elf as well. Like, reveals more than they discussed privately, and goes like, oh, he wasn't supposed to say that. And then he talks to Crafty saying, why did you say it? Crafty's playing him a little bit, and we find out that there's more to this, and there's that intrigue of what is he planning, what's this crafty man crafting, right? What's the wizard doing here? And so then that the plot scene that certainly sticks out to me still is, like, just well done and effective. I was like, oh damn, was that midpoint of building up how the voting works in this, in the politics here. Like, so everyone, you know, puts their axe in, and here's what happens if there's a if you end up losing it, you get an axe thrown. I liked how that was set up, that when it came down to the votes, it was tied and Fletch makes that decision. We know the consequences of that from it being built up. We know that we know what's going to happen, but also the surprise of it, of the hints and nods to Jackal doesn't know everything that's going on, and it was so believable that Fetch was a part of something and there was more to it. Now, I really enjoyed that, and that was very well done. And also, when he had to get kicked out and leave, and you kind of had this, what you typically see as an inciting incident in the beginning of a book where our character's town is attacked or something happens, and then there's this call to adventure for your typical hero's journey. If you then have to go out there into the big wide world, this happens in the midpoint for him. It was also the like this whole save the cat as you write a story. Save the cat. That's for screenwriting, write a book, right?
It's the low moment. Yeah,
but for the midpoint there, there's either the false defeat or false victory, and in this case, it's the false defeat, right? Yeah. Where it's the he loses in the middle, but it's the false loss, because then after that, then you have your build up throughout the rest of the book. Okay, how do you face this false defeat? Now he's starting to build back up, get a team. Then he has victorious moments of building, building, building. Then there's your little all is lost and jump back. I liked how that was structured overall. And the drawback for me is more the ending of, the stuff that I really loved there. I wish it leaned more into that direction in the finale with, as we've already just repeated with the Fetch stuff, I wish it leaned more into that. But, you know, you have your last stand, you have your, like, I get it, went in your more classical fantasy route, but certainly memorable enough. But that's my overall thoughts, though.
I do mostly agree with you there. However, I do want to say like two central plot points that kind of rub me the wrong way, and I want to see what you think about it.
Yeah.
It adds to the believability. The sludge and the orcs.
Sludge and the orcs.
Yes. I feel like the sludge is... It really felt like he was as powerful as the plot demanded it in the moment.
Of course, yeah.
And it wildly back and forth of actually the sludge is just this unbeatable monster, takes out all these orcs, like undefeatable. Only Crafty's magic can handle it.
Sure.
And then not that, of basically like Jack and all them kind of stand up to him and like their fight. It did not make too much sense. And I think what's a worse version of that were the orcs in general. Of
okay.
It's initially set up of like orcs are incredibly powerful. They're like they are a serious threat. They're more powerful than half orcs, humans. The only reason the half orcs have a chance is because they're on their mounts. Yep. They got their hogs and they can pick them off at a distance and they can pepper them with arrows, run around and tactics and because they're cavalry. That's why they're able to succeed. And then, and along with the centaurs as well, the centaurs are supposed to be incredibly powerful. And like going, okay, it is supposed to be a disaster level event. And when we see Jackal and the other half orcs go up against both the centaurs and just like chart, like it's what, like six of them charging. Like over 100 centaurs, and they just barrel through, and one of them dies, but the rest are like perfectly fine. And it's like, really? Okay. These centaurs aren't real much of a threat. You're butchering them. And then, same thing with the orcs, of like, it's nine of them going up against 300 orcs, and they're doing pretty well. They're not doing that bad. Like, yeah, they lose in the end, but like they're cutting them down. I'm a little confused of how actually much of a threat.
But power dynamics.
Yeah, the threat of the orcs doesn't seem as threatening, but especially by the end, I'm like, are these orcs even really like they're supposed to be built up as like such a significant threat, and now I'm just, they seem like just. Another half-orc or another enemy, or even, honestly, worse. It seems like half-orcs are better than orcs in general.
The wizards certainly feel powerful.
Yeah, the wizards are powerful.
Like, but what the hell can they do, right? Do you want to get into world-building then? Discussing with the
half-orcs? Sure.
What would you give that out of 5 stars?
This is where I could probably move a little bit, but I initially gave it a 3. Neutral. The things I liked the half-orc culture. I liked everything with the kiln, how they do their politics, how orcs treat each other, their style of comedy, mm-hmm. how they deal with relationships, like all that. The wider world, really neutral in and just so.
Balanced there, yeah.
Balanced there.
I give it a 3.75, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And basically agree with I like the orc culture, how their voting works, which just discussed a little bit. Also, the reasoning on how. Oh, were you going to raise yours a little bit?
I'm already thinking of like culture to me matters far more than the wider world. I really, I like it.
On our 5 stars of Forget Reality versus 1 star's No Immersion, like I was certainly immersed. I certainly felt mm-hmm. like this was a real culture. The Brotherhood helps too with getting the Grey Bastards in their rapport. But
the orc stuff and the centaur stuff of the power dynamics really does pull from the world for me of like, I do not see them as a significant threat anymore. Same thing with the sludge. Am I going?
There's a couple of notes that I really liked about the explanation for why the orcs fight there as well, of just how the map worked. At least this was my visual in the head too, of the orcs not being able to swim. There's a large spans of water for them to cross over land, but there's this one portion where they're strong enough they can swim over a ford. There's a small enough gap there in the water where they're able to cross. This is why the orcs are concentrated at the very least. So this is why this is the central point. And the Badlands, this is why this is the contested and dangerous territory. I think that was well set up and explained. I liked that. I liked how it worked as functionally worked with the world. But yeah, mainly it's the orc culture, and certainly feeling as I was following Jackal and this not human protagonist, no one felt human. They certainly all felt completely different. This was not a human protagonist. This was a completely different world. My immersion wasn't broken at any point. Which in other books, even FBO books we've read, where there was like some dialogue or lines that were said that pulled me out, and we're like, that doesn't feel like what would be said in world. So that was certainly helped too. Yeah. But what about you're saying about the wider world more, hey, the centaurs and that stuff.
The mystery, but yeah, those, the different species, not as interesting. The wider war ultimately not being as intriguing, and the magic.
Which is all that kind of stuff. Is the buildup, you know, what happened before the book on page. Because world building is, hey, does it live off the page, right?
Yeah, the history... It's not bad, especially just setting up like where the half-orcs have been historically, like slaves to both humans and orcs, and how they've wedged themselves in between and like grappled this tiny piece, a tiny piece in the board. So I liked that. I liked that well enough. That was pretty cool.
I did like that too. Yeah.
But other than that,
the whole plague portion that explanation we get from Warbringer or
Warbler,
yeah.
I think it's certainly intriguing and definitely, I think, a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it made sense a lot, but there is something to be said of like the magician's plans of like creating this virus or this magical disease. And I would think they would know it would affect humans. Like, so why did they willingly go up? Like, or is it justification of they weren't able to complete their experiment? Like, they were working toward trying to make the plague that only kills orcs, but because they didn't finish their experiments and it affects both humans and orcs. Is that the whole... I think that's the justification of why the wizards would even go down this path. Because it doesn't make sense to me of why they would make a disease and be like, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's kill both sides. Awesome.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Am I right on the on base here of because they didn't complete the experiment, that's why it's the way it is?
I believe so. Okay. Yeah, I think so. I think, and also, well, especially too, because this... what was it? There was nine of them, right? Eight or nine. There was nine of them, including Claymaster. The Claymaster alone made him having this, made him a threat.
Yeah.
In that way as well. So it's like, yeah, I think that's the explanation for the most part. I also was a little vague on some of the, when we left the kiln, so this is, I guess, wider world stuff, I was a little vague on the wizards, and maybe we're supposed to, just like the wizards' background in history.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's supposed to be the case of where we get the little glimpse of what the wizards, but they're supposed to be the uber powerful, more ethereal. You see what Crafty's able to do.
They have their own politics to play. They are their own faction in and of themselves.
So that wasn't fully delved into, but I'm imagining since this is a series where now that he's going after Crafty, where the book ends of we're not letting him escape, go after him, and Flesh's last words to him is, you know, go get it done.
Yeah.
That will probably be explored in the future books.
That is my guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Anything else? Want to go to prose?
Let's go to prose.
I gave it a 3.5. Good.
I completely agree. It's good.
Good.
3.5. Good prose. The character voices definitely feel not human, which is very important to me in this book. If we're following a bunch of half orcs, they better be more orcish and not completely human.
Right.
That worked really well. Their camaraderie, the banter between them back and forth was good. The descriptions and fight scenes were fun. So all good stuff.
Yeah.
I was not taken out of the story with the writing.
Agreed. Yeah, a good overall as well. I think the dialogue was the more well-done portion, too. Ditto. Ditto to what you said. And anything, any way you describe this prose, any way to any analysis there, or I don't have a good explanation. I don't know. I'm trying to add value. I can't really think of much else to say other than enjoy it.
It's modern fantasy prose is the best way to put it. It is. It's pretty plain. It's clear glass window for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Descriptive in nature, doesn't really go into, you know, waxing descriptions, but does the action well. The dialogue is the highlight rather than the poetic descriptions of nature. So
fair enough. All right, that is then our review for The Grey Bastards, and now that we've discussed it, we can put our timestamp right around here, where we're going to go over the 10 books and see what our final ranking for the SPFPO is.
I did change world a little bit.
You went up on world. Let's see. Yeah, let me see if there's any change to the score.
I'm wondering between like a personal disappointment versus like I acknowledge how this book would work really well for many people. I'm tempted to bump the score by 0.25, like
somewhat disappointed.
I'm somewhat disappointed in the direction, but the level of quality it is better than maybe what I'm thinking.
Well, think for you. Be selfish.
Yeah.
Be selfish. Is it disappointing? Is it very, or is it somewhat?
It is disappointing.
Okay, I would keep it then. If that's what you'd feel, then just keep it there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because don't try to like think write for somebody else. You know.
Like, oh yeah, I'm just trying to think of the objective score of like, well, am I being
a little too harsh?
Am I being too harsh because of an individual moment where I do acknowledge all the good stuff about it? So that's what I'm trying to think about.
Got it. Yeah, I'm thinking too. I think with individual scores, I'm gonna adjust a little, maybe go down a little on some. Or higher on some, I'll adjust slightly. But overall, I still think I feel somewhat good. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if that's our score, then it's tied with Small Miracles. How we can decide this is we can just total the categories that we did and see which one had higher. Like, you know, total the most, do all that basically.
Okay.
All right, then we're going to do a quick cut scene to see which one is higher. Based on totaling our categories. We'll be back in 1 second. And we're back. So we totaled all of our categories for each of the books, and we averaged the categories to get an accurate number. And The Grey Bastards slightly edged out Small Miracles on the average score. So if we're to look, let's see if we agree with this, Rich. We can get this as our last check as we submit this as our final thoughts here. The order would then be... Here we go. They're bastards. Number one, our top book for SPFPO Contest of Champions, The Sword of Kaigan.
Yep. Of course.
Number two, By Blood, By Salt.
Definitely.
Number three, Orconomics.
Mm-hmm.
Number four. Now, first, I think I agree with those three, too. Already,
three in that order? Definitely.
Number four, The Lost War. Number five, Where Loyalties Lie. Number six, The Thief Who Pulled on Trouble's Braids. Number seven, The Grey Bastards. Number eight, Small Miracles. Number nine, Murder at Spindle Manor. And number 10, Reign and Ruin. Does that all sound right?
For me, I would put Small Miracles above Grey Bastards. But
Personally,
but for our overall scare, yeah. That's as close to right. By the averages, completely agree.
Yeah, I would say, so looking through that, I agreed, yeah.
Yeah, my only quibble is that middle one, close. Yeah. I get it.
I see it. Yeah, fair enough.
So,
but that's our order, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any, like, yeah, little quibble there, but otherwise, I think...
Especially with you disliked Small Miracles far more than I
guess
was
that's
disappointed
what.
With...
Yeah, that's what it is. I think that's why they're flopped a little bit, yeah. But okay, that's our total then. But for the most part, too, yeah, I like this list. I think our list is correct.
And it is the correct
list. All the other judges should look at our list.
Yeah.
And then put that order.
Right. Yeah, I mean, why look at any other list? We have the correct one.
I'm very curious to see what wins.
Yes.
Because it's a close race. You go check out, we'll have the link in the description below for the competition to see which one edges it out and wins the whole thing. I do personally think like Sorokagan's gotta win. I'm always rooting for that. It's one of my favorite books.
I'm betting.
It's always However, gonna be the case. But there's
to
others.
Me, I am shocked that By Blood by Salt is lower than I would have expected.
Yeah.
That's the dark horse I'm secretly rooting for. Like, yes, Sorokagan's my top pick, but I want By Blood by Salt to rise up the ranks.
Want to do a quick peek to see as of recording what it's at?
Sure.
Let's see, SBFBO, Contest of Champions. Here we go. Now, this is not all of them are submitted yet because judges are still taking part. The Captured in Words still has to submit a lot and before we go blog, etc. But currently, it's Sorokagan, Orgonomics, Small Miracles, Blood Book by Salt, top four. And it goes on from there. So we'll see. We'll see.
All right. We'll find out. But thank you all so much for watching. Let us know what you think about the book down below. And we'll catch you guys in the next one.
Bye, all.
Bye, everyone.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.